welcome to Check It Out, Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Wobber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we are doing Crypt of the Necrodancer and The Wolf Among Us.
Indeed. Telltale's Fables, The Wolf Among Us.
Yes.
And Necrodancing, Crypt of the Necrodancer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the official title, I believe. Necrodancing.
Yes. Yeah, Are We Human? Necrodancer.
Yeah.
Is how I think the song goes. Yeah. So. All right. Nick, tell me about Crypt of the Necrodancer.
Sure. So Crypt of the Necrodancer is a game from Brace Yourself Games. This is their first game. I believe they're out of Vancouver, BC. And it is kind of just released as early access as of July 30th. And it is a roguelike rhythm game. It's not even, like, I want to call it a roguelite, but it actually, like, as far as you can combine those two genres, it pretty much is just a, you know, all the regular aspects of a roguelike just with the rhythm game aspects thrown into it. So
yeah, cool. It's not like a rogue skin placed over a platformer like Rogue Legacy or over like a bullet hell twin stick like Isaac is.
Right.
You know, it is essentially just an action oriented rogue game where like all of your turns and all the enemy's turns take place on the beat.
Yep. No. And so, yeah, the game soundtrack is done by Jerry Brownowski, the sort of indie music love child who's done every good indie game music there's ever been.
More or less. It's him and then every once in a while Anamanaguchi and,
right.
And everything. But yeah, the theming for this episode, I was calling it the good music episode.
Yeah.
Because both these games have really excellent music. And
really good music.
Nick, you should definitely cut in at some point the second level. Like the bouncy song from Crypt of the Necrodancer.
Okay, I'll try and find that, and I'll put it in here.
The song is so good. Like the music in this game is very, very good.
This has been
like one of me and Nick's like most anticipated games because we played it at PAX last year.
Yeah.
And just it was supposed to come out last November and it just took a long time, and we should note that it's in early access now, or in alpha rather,
right?
So any, you know, criticism or anything like this is probably not what the game's going to ultimately look like, and they even say that, like, when you start it there's a splash screen that's like there's placeholder art and music,
right?
You know, so it's kind of, and it kind of comes through, I think, in that like the early levels are more developed and more kind of balanced and more tweaked than the later levels are.
Okay.
How far did you end up getting?
I got to the boss of the first zone. I've never gotten to zones 2 or 3 or it's beyond.
Just yesterday I was able to beat zone 2 by like amazing drops. Like,
gotcha.
Just, you know, super, super lucky drops. Zone 3, I haven't been able to get out of our first room in it without dying. And like, I was thinking about it because it's got a little bit Isaac-ness where you essentially, you know, each run, you have permadeath, but you unlock something and give it a greater chance of appearing.
Right.
So it's like, oh, this weapon might appear now. But unlike Isaac, in Isaac, like, you always, before you get to the chest or what have you, you always have to go through those early floors, which are a difficulty, like, you know, they ease into difficulty, but then they're also character building floors.
Yes.
Like, this is low stakes and I can make my guy.
Mm-hmm.
But Necrodancer is almost like 4 difficulty levels than 4 levels.
Yeah.
Like, there's no continuity between them. So after you beat zone 1, you don't go into zone 2 with all of your equipment. You just start zone 2 fresh.
Yeah. That's,
and it's hard.
Unfortunate. Yeah.
And zone 3 is ridiculous. And I can't even imagine zone 4. So it's like, I think it really needs some tweaking there. Like, if you could just make a run through the whole game, through zone 1 to zone 3, like with that kind of equipment, I might be okay. But as is, like, you just start out with your shitty dagger and nothing else every single time.
That's unfortunate.
It's hard.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
One of the neat things about it being like a rhythm based game, when Gary and I first played it, was we played it on a DDR dance pad at PAX. Because everything is just controlled with arrows, even using your spells and items or just combinations of the arrows.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes for a real interesting way to play it. And I kind of, you know, I can get accustomed to the arrows, but I'm not used to playing rhythm games that way. I'm sure people who come from, like, Beatmania or any of those other games that kind of have a popularity of people playing on the keyboard would be right at home with this. But for me, like, I kind of feel like I want the dance pad to play this because that's just what I'm more accustomed to as far as controlling it.
Yeah, and well, they also, I think the dance pad version, like, is a little bit easier, too. It says that in the menu, like, dance pad, slightly easier version.
Oh, I didn't I saw that it said dance pad. I didn't realize that was actually, like, a difficulty decrease.
I think so, because it's, you know, it'd be harder to use the items and the, you know, you'd get run into some endurance problems.
Right.
Especially, like, some of the later beats are just really, you know, fast-paced. Like, the third world, as far as I can tell, is all techno. Like, yeah. It's all really fast-paced techno. Yeah, I would love to try it with a dance pad. I don't have one. I don't have one that I could use on my PC, but it would be fun to try.
Yeah, I agree.
It works just fine with arrows, and it is really compelling to play. Like, the music is really good, and it does, like, it engages you in the beat in a way that music doesn't do.
Right.
You know, like, other games, like, I don't leave other game, you know, music rhythm games, like, doing everything to the beat. Like, it is very, like, everything is the beat. Like, your little heart meters bounce to the beat. Like, everything is just, you know, it's very ingrained.
Your whole screen is reacting. When you've got a coin bonus going, which if you've kept the rhythm up for a certain amount of time, you get a multiplier to your coins, and then the whole floor becomes a dance floor, and it's flashing at you on the beat every time.
Yeah.
And all the monsters are dancing and moving to the beat, and all your icon UI are all bouncing to the beat.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I love there's a tons of, like, super awesome little touches, and that's why I have a lot of hope for this becoming, you know, better as they work on it.
Yeah.
Because some of the details are just, like, super compelling. Like, I love the shopkeeper that sings along.
That's amazing.
You just had to be close to him, and he just kind of, like, opera sings to whatever techno song you're doing.
And it's even meant to be, like, a hint of your being near the shopkeeper, because you can kind of hear him muted through walls.
And they do tons of really awesome, tricky things with the sound thing. Like, it is not just a gimmick. They actually use it.
Yeah.
Which is really important. Like, there's one of the boss setups you can have. Like, the bosses are randomized, similar to Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the boss setups you can have are a conga, so every eighth beat is missing, and nobody can act on that beat. So you have to, like, plan your things really, really intentionally.
So yeah, I just got the boss that I got on the first zone was the conga one. I didn't even realize that was what that meant.
Yeah. Yeah, and it randomizes. Like, when you come again, you probably won't get that same boss.
Oh, that's cool.
There's a regular stage boss later that deafens you,
mm-hmm.
so you can't hear the beat.
Yeah, yeah, I've run into him on one of those little portals that drop you into, like, a boss room.
Yeah,
which I've never successfully gotten through.
They're hard.
Anytime I drop into one of those rooms, I'm dead.
It's really about, like, it's weird. Like, just as a pro tip, like, the only thing that made me be able to get anywhere in the game is finding a weapon with 2 range.
Yes.
Like, I have to be far away from things, or
the spear is I only just beat a dragon boss for the first time without having a ranged weapon, because not having the extra length of a spear is that just decreases the difficulty by a massive degree.
Surprisingly great is also the whip. You don't even have to get close to anything. You can just, like, go on a different, because it has like an infinitely wide range.
Right.
Like, one tile in front and all tiles to the side. Like, there's one of the boss. This is a minor spoiler because you haven't run into it. One of the awesome things, though, is there's a boss that's a chessboard, and all the pieces move like chess pieces to the beat. So you have to kind of, like, predict where they're at and get to the king.
That's avoiding. Crazy.
It's really cool.
That is, like, really cool.
Like, it does so much with the concept that makes me know there's a core idea there.
Yeah.
Even though I think it definitely needs some polish. Which they release an alpha, but
right.
I really loved it. Like, I could see if they balance that difficulty, this being a real huge time suck for me.
I agree. There's a weird thing about it. Like, I get super aggravated with it, like, really quick. Like, I don't know, with Rogue Legacy, I played like 20 runs in a row before I would, like, get fed up and need to take a break. But with this one, like, I'll do one run, 2 runs, and then exit it, and then all of 10 minutes later start it back up again.
Yeah.
And play it again.
It desperately needs a quick restart button, like, rather than having to go through the menu, because, like, especially in the second world, which is, you know, ramps up the difficulty a lot. Like, I was able to beat the second world, but it's much harder. Like, sometimes you are just screwed right off the bat, and, like, it has that Isaac thing where you unlock items as you go, but some of them aren't always useful, so it's actually kind of working against you.
Right.
Like, when you're first starting, you're very likely to get a spear because it's the only other weapon that's unlocked, like the spear and the broadsword,
mm-hmm.
I think. And then as you get more items, it's like, I keep finding, like, monocles and different magical rings and shit.
Right.
And I really just need a weapon, you know?
Yeah, I think there should be some balance towards that. Maybe, like, a weapon-specific chest or something that is more like they did here. So
there's an equipment specific chest, but I think that like each floor, or at least the first floor, should have a weapon related chest.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be a good weapon every time, but like, you know, some kind of upgrade your weapon, because even like a better material dagger makes a big difference. And it also has a sense of mystery that Isaac has, where like you don't know exactly what things do and you kind of have to figure out as you go, which is really fun.
Yeah, I'm getting a big kick out of that so far. Because like you said, it kind of has that deck building element where you get diamonds in your playthroughs and you go spend them in between runs and unlock new stuff that can appear in chests.
Yeah.
And even then, like, you just have a name. You don't really have any inkling as to what they do.
There's also a weird bit in it that armor stacks, and there's tons of different armor pieces for it being totally optional. So like, depending on how your luck goes, you can get enough armor to where you're, you know, very rarely or just barely taking damage when you get hit, because later floors and enemies like will do more than one heart
right
on things. So it's just kind of interesting, like, you can get to where I think on the run that I finally made it past the second world, I had like 3 pieces of armor.
Nice.
So I was, you know, nothing was doing, like, things were doing like quarter hearts you know, to me. So it was just, you know, really no problem.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really good, though. Like, I like it a lot. It's definitely worth supporting, and I look forward to seeing the beta and ultimate release of it. And I hope that they don't do that thing that, you know, some developers do where they kind of give up.
Well, you know? Luckily, I just found out today that they got published by Clay, the guys who are doing Don't Starve and some other, like, indie game publishing.
Oh, okay.
And I assume, you know, with that comes some extra funding to actually get it out. And now, obviously, now that they're on early access, they're actually bringing in some funds. So hopefully they stick with it and make a more complete, polished product in the end. Which, I mean, it's definitely playable right now. It's plenty of fun to play. But like you said, I'm sure the end game is not as developed. And you know, there's only so much content so far.
Hmm. Yeah, that's definitely, I agree. So, yeah, well worth it.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to The Wolf Among Us.
Indeed.
So Wolf Among Us, it is a Telltale game, episodic adventure game, very much like The Walking Dead. If you have that, you'll recognize the formula immediately. But it, instead of being based on the Walking Dead comic book series, this is based on Bill Willingham's Fables comic series.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, release dates, it came out, the first episode actually came out on October 11th of 2013, and just finished up in July with episode 5.
Yeah, and yeah, we wanted to wait for it to be done. We've
exactly.
had it for a while.
Don't want to, there's no point in playing a fully story-based game and cover it on a podcast if the story isn't all out yet, so.
Yeah.
But it's available on, like, everything. It's on, it's on 360 and PlayStation 3 and 4 and Xbox One and Vita and iOS. Like, it's just everywhere. So
yeah, you can play this however you like. And it's interesting too, because it's kind of the confirmation of Telltale, their new direction, because there's kind of a pre-Walking Dead and post-Walking Dead Telltale.
Yes.
You know, like the Sam and Max stuff, and that stuff's fun, you know, and the Monkey Island and Back to the Future and stuff. But then Walking Dead came out and they realized, like, oh, nobody likes inventory management puzzles.
Right.
Like, everyone just wants this dialogue and this, like, interactive story. And then this is a real confirmation, like, hey, we're going full bore with that.
Yeah, exactly. They started off sort of just being the last torch bearers of the adventure game genre and stuck to kind of every gun that there was. And then when Walking Dead came out and introduced this, like, it's all about choices and dialogue and quick time
It's because
events.
Of Double Fine Adventure. They were able to relax.
Yeah, exactly. Like, someone else has got
the
torch
back. Yeah, we're good. We can stop running in place. The Shafe's got us hot.
Exactly. So, the Shafe. Do we have a nickname for him now?
Dishes.
I didn't realize.
But yeah, the Wolf Among Us is... So it's the same kind of thing, same gameplay, with some minor tweaks if you're used to The Walking Dead, and you probably are because it was a huge, huge game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit more action-oriented than The Walking Dead.
Yeah, some more quick-time events than Walking Dead had.
And totally different genre. Like, this is a like a film noir, like, society building. Like, you know, it's a class war story.
Yeah, it's a... classic detective story with a community that is relying on every choice you make.
Yep. And if you're not familiar with the basic, like, premise of Fables, it's one of those, like, elevator pitches that can't miss. And, like, the idea is that everyone, you know, who there are stories about, is essentially exiled in the real world and still kind of living their lives, but they're down on their luck and they've lost, you know, their kingdoms and all that such. So they've been driven out. So you have characters like Snow White and you know, the boy who cried wolf, who shows up eventually. And I've read the comics for the first like 100 issues or something like that.
So oh, awesome.
That character doesn't show up in the game.
But
yeah, you know, Snow White and the Big Bad Wolf, obviously, and Beauty and the Beast, and you know, these characters.
Yeah, so you play in like the events take place in like I assume it seems like it's a borough of New York or something
that is just
called Fabletown or something that all these fables are exiled to, and you play as Bigby Wolf, who, as you said, is the Big Bad Wolf. But all the fables, they're all assume a human form thanks to this magic, and are required to do so by the like law of Fabletown. They're kind of self-governed.
Yeah, and you can't. It's like in Vampire the Masquerade, like how you can't show off
exactly
your supernatural powers and the like.
And so you're Bigby Wolf, and you're the sheriff who most of his stuff is just kind of enforcing that rule and kind of getting into minor altercations with people to stop, you know, infighting between the fables.
Yeah, yeah, and it's interesting too. It has a really interesting place in the kind of canon of the book. Because it's a prequel, like it takes place before the comics start, and it's when things are shittier. Like when the comics start, things aren't quite as run down, and you get impression this is much earlier. And it's cool too, because it does similar to The Walking Dead. Like I feel like The Walking Dead has been explored in a lot of different mediums and explored really well, but the game explored an aspect of it that hasn't really been, you know, explored,
right?
Or like explored an aspect a different way. Like the fatherhood thing is a big theme in the book, but they did it in a different way.
Right.
And this is, you know, this kind of like class war stuff has never really been brought up in the books.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really like it's very faithful to the kind of spirit. And the books, you know, are very good for a long time. Like they, you know, eventually get kind of fall off the rails. But the first like, you know, 100 issues, which is tons of comics, you know, saying like the first 9 years of it are good. You know, only the first 8 years of it are good.
Right.
But, it's very good for a long time. And the and this fits in really well into the kind of feel and mythos of it.
Awesome.
Yeah. And it's very plot-based, so we're going to talk a lot about it in the spoiler section.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's a whole lot more we can really talk about without going into the spoiler section, because it is a story-based game, and everything we really want to talk about is about the story of the game, and we don't want to ruin that for you folks.
Yeah. So, like, in terms of the general, like, recommendations or what have you, like, if you like, I think if you enjoy The Walking Dead, if, like, you can handle that kind of game where it's not Twitch-based at all.
Right.
And you just want to be kind of taken for a ride, and truly like Telltale is doing what David Cage wants to do, you know, like this is how you do an interactive movie or an interactive story.
Right.
And they, you know, nobody is doing it better than this, you know, by remotely. So if you enjoy that, like this is the way to do it. And I think that this is well worth your time and money.
Yeah. I think it's an even better story than The Walking Dead was, which I actually really liked season one of The Walking Dead a lot, but I feel this is a well more thought out and well-rounded story that, is a lot more attention grabbing than Walking Dead was for me.
It's a lot less about the moment to moment kind of survival and plot, and it's a mystery.
Right.
So there's no central, like they kind of introduce a central mystery halfway through The Walking Dead, but it's not, you know, it is halfway through. And Walking Dead season two, like they just released episode 4, episode 3 straight up climaxed like the story. So I, you know, it's at this point, like it's not, I think out of the three, it's turning out to be the least compelling.
Right.
But this is up there with Walking Dead for me. Like Walking Dead was the first, so I have a hard time splitting hairs, you know.
Right.
But this, I love this. Like this is really, really good.
Yeah. So definitely, if you like The Walking Dead or think you're into a game where story is absolute centerfold, then check it out.
Yep. What can people do to help out the show before we spoil it up?
There's a ton of stuff they can do to help out the show. First and foremost, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends about the show. Those are by far the biggest ways to get our podcast into more people's ears.
Yeah.
But if you like the show and want to interact, we're also available on Facebook at facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade or on Twitter at Comrade Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And you can also submit recommendations there or on our main site, duckfeed.tv/comrade.
Yeah, I definitely do those things, and we'd appreciate it.
Yeah.
And if you have not played The Wolf Among Us, or if you think you're going to, now is the time to stop listening, because we are going to talk about the story. So, and if you haven't, and if you are, or if you're shutting down now, we will see you in 2 weeks.
Yep. Thanks for listening. And spoiler space starts now.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, Wolf Among Us. Let's talk some story stuff.
Yeah. So, like, it's a murder mystery.
Yeah.
Or at least it starts off like a murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the idea. Like, you're investigating this murder of, like, a principal character in it of Snow White, at least at first.
No, when it starts off, you're investigating the murder of a prostitute.
Yes, and then, at the end, that's the cliffhanger.
Right.
So I played these. It's kind of interesting. We're coming at this with different perspectives because I played them as they came out, and Nick kind of cram-jammed them.
Yes.
All at once. So, or at least like, after they come out, like, did it as one full experience.
Yeah, I did it as one full experience. Yeah. So you kind of stop an altercation between the woodsman and a prostitute, and she never tells you her name, and then you find her head on the doorstep of your apartment building the next morning.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. And essentially, like, what you're getting at, like, without going through, you know, turning this into a watch out for fireballs, like, what ultimately is happening, you know, that kind of class war theming, which is there from the start, is really mm-hmm. the central thrust of this. Like,
yeah,
this is sure. about, you know, the haves and have nots and what people do in order to make it that's not necessarily legal.
Right.
And the people who accept that, which is a really pretty nuanced theme for, you know, a video game to tackle.
For sure.
And not something I've seen a lot.
No. I don't think I've seen it at all.
It's like Papers, Please.
Yeah.
Like you are forced to kind of choose to take care of yourself and circumvent the rules in Papers, Please. Like, it has some of that same kind of theming.
That's true.
Yeah, which is really just, you know, I wouldn't expect that in a noir story.
Yeah. No, it's a really good blend of the two, actually. Like, I felt like it was a detective murder story the whole time, but there's this really good underlying story, and it really... kind of compelled your choices and actions, because you have, you know, all of your friends are involved in what choices you make, basically, because all your choices impact Fabletown as a whole.
Yeah, you're setting a precedent. Like, there's this idea that you are, you know, this is how, and near the end, like, the characters kind of start saying this out loud, but even before they do, like, they're saying, like, hey, we're just kind of starting here. We have to decide how we want the society to be.
Right.
You know, like, stories about building societies, it's always really interesting to me. Like, that's a big theme also in Deadwood. And, like, the characters in Deadwood really wrestle with, like, hey, we're here and we have this chance to build something new. What do we want it to look like?
Yeah.
You know, and that's huge. Like, that's really, really interesting. And the way it expresses itself through a murder mystery and through this kind of Byzantine plot is just really smart, because you are engaged in the moment to moment, but it's kind of subversively giving you this, you know, how do we want to behave as human beings?
Exactly.
Story.
There's a lot of major choices kind of teeter on your decision to either be humane or allow your inner big bad wolf to kind of take the best of you and, you know, make you murder all these baddies that you're running across.
Yeah. In general, how did you go about it?
I went the route of trying to kill as little as possible and make for a better society.
Hmm.
So
yeah, I definitely killed a bunch of people, but then also justified it and or like only
right.
people who I thought, you know, where I needed to die.
I think I only outright killed the club manager guy.
Oh yeah,
because I don't think there's a choice, because he gets, you know, he gets stabbed in the fight prior, and it's basically, do you let him suffer or do you end it quick for him?
Yeah.
And I ended it quick for him.
Yeah, you're not ultimately responsible for killing him.
Right.
Well,
it was your knife, but
yeah,
it was
yeah.
everyone was attacking
yeah.
you.
Yeah, it was you were justified.
Yeah.
Speaking of Timothy Oliphant vehicles. Like the I think I killed Tweedledee or Tweedledum as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Just because I was at that point, like that scene, which I don't want to spoil even in the spoiler space, because if you had decided to push your luck and get into this area, like that's a very pivotal and riveting scene.
It's a really good scene.
Yeah, and it's just, I was just very charged during it. And I was like, yeah, fuck this guy. Like, fuck these people.
That totally makes sense, but that was me trying to, I don't know, like, bring him back down. Bring
oh,
him
yeah.
be, like, back down from that, the, you know, animalistic high he was on.
Yeah, that's the conflict. That's what they're going for.
Right.
You know, and it reminded me of, like, one of my favorite parts in The Walking Dead. Like, if you haven't played The Walking Dead Season 1, fast forward 15 seconds. But the end of it where you're confronting the main antagonist, like, there's a part where he will escape if you stop. It tells you to stop. It stops telling you to press the button. If you actually stop, he gets away. But if you are just pounding on the button, he dies
mm-hmm.
with it no longer giving you a prompt
right.
to do so. So it is playing with the you being so
as
involved
player.
In the character, yeah, the player being so involved as to give it a choice that it doesn't say that it's giving you.
That's so smart.
It's one of my favorite moments in video games. Like, it is one of my, it's up there in my like Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And this, you know, that part kind of reminded me of this, where like, it wasn't quite as effective, but it reminded me of, I know what the game wants me to do, but I am actually, the same way this character could be so enraged as to ignore, you know, the better angels of his nature, I'm going to ignore the better angels of my nature and make this motherfucker pay because, you know, he's been shooting me a bunch.
I think in the end of the penultimate episode, there's kind of a similar but opposite choice where there's a very obvious prompt for you to attack the Crooked Man, mm-hmm. kind of the main antagonist here. And you can just let it ride. And, like, you know, if you do that, he's going to attack. Like, he's going to, the gun's going to fire.
Yeah.
The gun's got silver bullets. And the prompt's there, and it's, like, just glowing at you, and he's talking, he continues talking. And if you let it pass, then you kind of catch him off rails, because that's what he was trying to
get out of you.
Yeah.
And that's in the last one. That's when he's when you've confronted him, and that's really cool because he is this kind of shithead who's just been very good at talking his way out of things.
Yeah.
And he does the like give himself up, but he's still oily, like, no, just take me in, like I want to present my case.
Right.
And like you have that like, you know, vigilante justice urge where it's like, listen, you know, I know that you are bad for the society.
And I know you could talk your way out of this if I let you.
So do I let you? And I played it both ways, like I ended up rolling back. And doing like letting him live because I wanted to see that scene, which is, you know, probably like that scene is wonderful. The last scene,
yeah,
the court scene. I wanted to see that with him there and with him out, or with without him there.
So I let him. I took him in.
Yeah,
I took him in alive. So so let me know what are kind of the consequences or the results of you actually killing him there in the room when you're alone with him.
You come off worse. Like you know when you are like Snow is mad at you and you have a harder time convincing people to your side.
Mm-hmm.
During the kind of, it's a lot like the Landsmeade in Dragon Age, actually. You have a harder time. So just like people are just like, yeah, what's going to stop you from doing this to us? You know? And then, you know, it's harder to argue them down. Like, yeah, I think I got a kind of a compromised, like, ending for it. And then Snow was real mad at me during the epilogue. Like, she didn't want to talk to me. Like, I was like, we need to talk. And she's like, I can't do it now. And it was really cold.
Gotcha.
So I damaged that relationship.
That's basically what I would expect from it. So.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. And when he's there, it's interesting because depending on what you do, you can kind of use his logic against him.
Yeah, so the final episode basically is surrounded mostly around this court scene around the Wishing Well, which is where all the baddies kind of get exiled to die.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it's a real like courtroom trying to persuade the jury of other fables. By kind of having your tongue sharper than his, if at all possible.
Yeah, and it's just such a thing. Like it's funny how at this point you've seen such evidence of it, but he's almost got a point, which is really strong. Like I know he's bad for things in the long run. Mm-hmm. However, he is right that the society has failed these people that have turned to him.
Right.
You know, and that kind of like no side, like both sides are right, no side is right. Is the mm-hmm. kind of morality that like I love seeing in games. You know, that's a real Torment thing. Like
yeah.
It reminded me because I was revisiting Torment recently a little bit, and there's like a guy who sold his body to the Dustman to be a slave, and his wife is really anguished by it, and he sold his body to like pay their rent or something.
Right.
And it's really interesting. Like you can put him out of his misery. She wants you to do that, but it was his choice. But he did it for the greater good. Like there's just, you need, you know, adding like a lot of, you know, it's not enough, like both sides, you know, need to be right and both sides need to be wrong to make compelling morality in games.
Exactly. Yeah. If it's all black and white, then you know what the right choice is and you know what the wrong choice is and there's no inner struggle in the player.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you know, everybody's done that. That's been done to death. You don't need to... If you can introduce something fresher, something more tugging on the actual player's morality, then you're gonna reach a place that other media hasn't.
Yep. Yeah, because it is one of those things where like games are games, and the difference between like the way the Telltale does it and the way that David Cage does it is like Telltale uses the fact that it's a game to further engage you.
Exactly.
You know, whereas like a David Cage just has a game next to a movie for the most part. And like that is a worse way to do it. And it's not taking advantage of the medium. Like it's not artistic in a, you know, a non-qualitative word, in like a definitional word. Like, it is not artful in the way that this is. So
I agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good shit.
I think that's about The Wolf Among Us. Yeah, I mean, I am so in love. When it's paired with writing this good,
yeah,
a game that is all just about choices and actually having those choices have an impact, it's just, like, kind of top of the media at this point. Like, that's such a good thing.
Yeah.
And for gaming to have right now.
I really like, it's true. It's also, like, this episodic content thing, like, there's been some talk about whether it serves Telltale or not. But one of the things I liked about it was, you know, just to speak, like, I think they're probably better if you do all of them once, and that's how I did, that's not how I did any of them, now that I think about it. I jumped on Walking Dead, like, episode 2, I think.
Right.
But the, is that, like, everyone, I never knew when it was coming out, and I would just come home, and it's like, oh, I have, like, a movie-length, really great gaming experience with a cool cliffhanger, you know, ahead of me for now. And, like, it would just be, like, a really, like, I like that kind of, that option, too. Like, something this high quality and this short, when you look at them as just individual episodes, like, that's a plus for me.
I don't think it's really doing them any disservice, because people, you know, like me, who want to be able to slam jam them all and play them all at once, you just wait.
Yeah.
It's like the game was going to take this long to be produced anyway. So the game, if the whole game had come out in July instead of starting in October and being slowly released until July, then I would have gotten the same experience no matter what.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you get the benefit of getting a short experience every, like you said, every
few months. It came out quicker than Walking Dead season 1 did, I believe. October to July is not, you know, it's like 6 months, so every couple months. It seemed more on schedule. So,
yeah.
And it, you know what, just as a side note too, like, this episode's running like slightly long for us, I think, but
that's fine.
One of the things I wanted to say is how I'm having a hard time being excited about the licenses they've picked up.
Right.
But, like, I like them so much that it's going to make, like, is Telltale going to get me to, like, play a Borderlands game? Because it doesn't seem like it from here, but, like,
yeah,
you know.
I'm not so sure about the Borderlands one. Yeah. Like, I'm okay with the Game of Thrones one. I want to see where they go with it and who they put on the writing staff for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Borderlands is gonna be a fucking stretch, man.
Yeah, I have no interest in that, and I think that, like, the metafiction of it is so fucking terrible. And I don't know. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see if what the reviews say. And
yeah, at least, you know, with these two, they had good base material to go off of.
Yeah, yeah, they, like, supported so
maybe they actually have writers good enough on staff to just kind of make a shitty IP into a good one. We'll find out.
Yeah, yep, yeah. Cool.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.